We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the Radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy, or is that just the way he acts?
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Hey, don't you just think that sometimes we're in this crazy, wacky competition to see who on either side of the political aisle, whether it's Democrat or Republican, can be more of a lunatic, ladies and gentlemen, because that's apparently where we seem to be in 2019. But good afternoon. I feel good about America right now and where we are. Here's one thing that is annoying me, though. You have, and look, I think that if we're honest about where the economy is and what it's been doing and what potentially just cyclically can happen in the future, a recession is probably going to happen. But let me tell you, and those of you who have listened to this show for a long time, and I'll get to the crazy in just a second. I got off track already. We're 2 minutes into the show and I already sort of had a diversion. I'll get back to it. I'll get back to crazy. Don't want to miss crazy. But for those of you who've listened to the show for a long time, you will remember that many, many times, whether it was on a roundtable or in a monologue here to start the show, during the Obama administration, we had terrible economic news. There were quarters when we were in negative growth, barely negative, but it was either flat or negative. And you have two of those quarters, although I think the definition of recession has been changed just a little bit. You have two quarters back to back of negative growth. That's a recession. I don't remember the CNNs of the world and the Post-Dispatch and the New York Times, the Washington Post, breathlessly being concerned about the state of the economy. They didn't even touch it. They would, the Post in particular, would bury bad economic news back on page 10A. They never wanted to talk about something along those lines. And I said at the time, I said, look, if this was George W. Bush, it was John McCain, Mitt Romney, you would see these things on the front page or on the headlines. And to my point, that's exactly what's happening today. Now, look, the Dow is down an eerie 666 points right now. I'm sure there's a conspiracy theory to go along with that. It was down the other day. There was a rebound last week. I don't get too worked up about that, but there are some indicators out there, just being honest about the economy, that have, I think alarmed some investors, not only investors, but some companies as far as what they're going to do with belt tightening in the future. And that's fair. But what's not fair is to instantly go to the R word and start I don't want to identify who this was. Well, man, one of my producers said earlier, it's almost like they're hoping and wishing for a recession. And he's right. That's what it seems like. All right, so let's get to crazy here. Should I start with D crazy or R crazy? We'll start with R crazy here this afternoon. Maybe I can use a little Benny Hill music here to get us started. I don't even know how you explain this, but this is Congressman Steve King from Iowa, who, if we're being completely honest, is a bit of a kook anyway. He's got a history of saying things that are pretty stupid. So he's at this West Side Conservative Club in Urbandale, Iowa, and he's defending his position against laws allowing abortion exceptions in cases of rape and incest. And he says, what?
What if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled those people out that were products of rape and incest? Would there be any population of the world left if we did that? Considering all the wars and all the rape and pillage that's taken place and whatever happened in culture after society, I know I can't certify that I'm not part of a product of that.
Did you get that? Dave, did you get that? Did you know what he said? He said, let me just kind of run through it again here. What if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled out anyone who is a product of rape or incest? Would there be any population of the world left if we did that? Considering all the wars and all the rapes and pillages that happened throughout all these different nations, I know that I can't say I was not a product of that. Okay. There's your nut job on the right. In fairness, let's do our nut job on the left this afternoon. And that would be AOC. There's no doubt about that. Here is, who was this interview with? She did a 60 Minutes interview and they referenced that. Do we know who this is? No, we don't know who it is. Does it really matter? Actually, the guy's pretty good. I should identify who he is. But he's asking her about cars.
Would you like to see gasoline-powered vehicles gone within 12 years?
Well, as much as it's technologically possible, I think we need to draw down our fossil fuels as much as we possibly can. I don't think we should build another pipeline at all in the United States of America. It's a matter of our survival. I don't even think it's a matter of political opinion. It's scientific fact.
Yeah, it's scientific fact that in 12 years would basically be evaporated on this planet. And there's nothing short of stopping cars and all fossil fuels that will save us. Just remember that. Didn't Al Gore make some predictions like this 30 years ago that never came true? All right, so we zipped through a bunch of different stories here this afternoon. Here's one for you. You're not going to want to miss this. Beto O'Rourke will deliver a major address to the nation tomorrow night, or tomorrow, resetting his campaign, which is floundering as a fight against Trump guns, white supremacy, and anything else. Big announcement. This will be, by the way, in case you're keeping track, his third relaunch since he entered the race less than 6 months ago. I mean, the Vanity Fair thing didn't work. That kind of backfired. Then in May, he wasn't doing well in the polls, and he started the town hall tour, and now he's doing it for a third time. So he's not giving up. I guess you can give him a little credit for that. Let's go back to Chris Cuomo just momentarily. There was a great column by Carl Cannon, who's one of the co-founders of RealClearPolitics.com, about Chris Cuomo and the blow-up against the guy the other night where he was called Fredo. And I always like Carl. He's been a guest on the show many times. And I like his take on this. He said, it can't be easy to have your intelligence questioned unexpectedly. It's not as if we all carry a certified copy of our SAT scores in our wallets. Even so, CNN anchorman Chris Cuomo mounted a singularly inflexuous rebuttal to the implication that he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. The exchange took place Sunday at a bar on New York's Shelter Island. We know what happened. The guy comes up, calls him Fredo. He goes nutso, and then basically makes the assertion that the word Fredo is on par with the N-word. He said, punk-ass bitches from the right call me Fredo. My name is Chris Cuomo. I am an anchor on CNN. Fredo is from The Godfather. And then he goes on, you know, we played this yesterday. He knows that he says it's an insult. It's like the N-word for us. So it's just ridiculous. So basically, Carl Cannon says, no, look, Cuomo was not attacked. He was gently needled by a heckler. It happens. And though Cuomo played the ethnic slur card in real time, that alibi didn't wash either. For starters, the Fredo disparagement has a long provenance in politics, used by conservatives against liberals and liberals against conservatives, and at least in one instance, by a liberal against a liberal. It's true that The Godfather is an Italian movie, Sicilian, if we're being, you know, totally accurate, but the insult itself does not reference ethnicity. It relates to mental acuity, along with misplaced pride, and Chris Cuomo's reaction evoked nothing if not Fredo Corleone in The Godfather 2. This is where we insert our Fredo bite.
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart and I want respect.
Now, what Carl Cannon does here is he brings us back with some memories. He talks about David Frum wrote about something in The Atlantic, and he mentioned Donald Trump goes full Fredo. Vanity Fair published a snarky piece 2 summers ago comparing Trump's oldest child and namesake to Fredo. You have George W. Bush, who was compared to Fredo. In 2004, Jonathan Chait, another journalist not known for an understatement, called Bush basically the Fredo of the Bush family. And Coulter called William Kennedy Smith the Fredo of the Kennedy family. Anyway, this goes on and on and on. But you know who else called himself Fredo or basically asked that question? Chris Cuomo in an interview with Curtis Sliwa in New York a couple of years ago.
Boy, see, I've dubbed it La Cuomo Nostra. That there is a group of people, of politicos, who always hint that they might run but don't necessarily plunge all the way. And they are members of La Cuomo Nostra.
So who am I then, Fredo?
Yes, exactly. So you better be careful that that your brother Andrew doesn't kiss you on both cheeks and then all of a sudden they take you out into the middle of the lake and then, where's Chris?
Yeah, Chris Cuomo saying, who am I then, Fredo? It was kind of funny to him then. It didn't seem like the N-word to him then because he used it. It hasn't seemed like the N-word to all these other people who have used it, but he gets a complete pass on, you know, making an idiot out of himself the other day. And again, you know, the one thing I said yesterday as we started the show, and I understand what Sean Hannity was saying. I think Hannity said what he did on Twitter defending Cuomo because he knows he's in similar situations like that. But no one gets a pass like Chris Cuomo got unless you're on CNN and you're trying to take down this president. If it were anyone else, they would be suspended. They might be fired. They would at the very least have a different defense presented by their network. And CNN stood by him completely, even though he said stupid things during the whole incident. We'll take a break. We got a lot to get to here this afternoon, including St. Louis Aldermanic President Lewis Reed, another kid that is killed on the north side. We'll talk a little bit about what we can do about that. You know, this is actually crunch time for the medical marijuana businesses here in Missouri as they apply for state licenses. So I want to give people an update on that. And we went out. There was a piece that I saw in the Wall Street Journal a couple weeks ago. And it talked about how young men in particular, and I don't know how older men, some of you older gentlemen listening right now would react to this. Your wives might have something to say about it. But a lot of guys are going to get pedicures. That's like an in thing. Now, mainly this was focusing on New York, which is a little different than St. Louis or other parts of Missouri, mind you. I'm trying to envision a nail salon in Festus, for example, that has a bunch of men in it. I don't think I'd see that. I'm trying to envision the crowd that I saw down at the Peavey Raceway when I saw Kenny Wallace a couple weeks ago getting a pedicure. That is not something that is really being painted very effectively in my mind. But what I will tell you is I went around here to the folks at Entercom St. Louis, including my producers, and said, would you ever do this or have you ever done it? Kyle McClellan, I cornered him earlier to do. We'll have a little bit of that in the 3 o'clock hour here on KMOX, plus an audio cut of the day.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information PM at 4 on KMOX.
Bunch of other audio that I want to get to this afternoon as well. Oh, and you know, I saw something. We're going to have this tomorrow. Nick Mead is a filmmaker who, I'm a big Springsteen E Street Band guy, and Nick Mead is a documentarian who just did a movie that you can find on some of the streaming services like iTunes and Amazon about Clarence Clemons, the big man from the E Street Band. So Nick Mead tomorrow afternoon on KMOX. We have a Reardon Roundtable on Friday. Jane Duker, Aldermanic President Lewis Reed will be here. He's on the show actually in the next half hour. And Gene Evans, the executive director of the GOP. The roundtable brought to you by the Better Business Bureau, a standards-based organization advancing marketplace trust. So there's a lot of work going on right now behind the scenes, pushing toward the beginning of next year with medicinal marijuana in Missouri. And speaking of the roundtable, he's a veteran of the panel. Jack Cardetti is a spokesperson for Mocan Trade with us this afternoon. Jack, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
So where are we right now? This is the crunch time where these applications are being submitted, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So this passed back in November, 66% of Missourians voted for medical marijuana in Missouri. Now we're in the middle of a two-week window where Missourians are able to apply to obtain one of the three licenses to be in the medical marijuana industry here in Missouri. So that window for application ends Saturday night, 11:59 p.m. So it really is a busy and important time for a lot of our members.
Okay, so how many licenses are going to be handed out?
In total, there'll be 338 licenses state of Missouri. There'll be 60 cultivation licenses, 86 infused product licenses, and then 192 dispensaries spread out across the state.
Do we know or can you gauge at this point the number of applications for said, you know, locations, dispensaries, and everything else?
Yeah, so even though the state's only going to hand out 338 licenses, more than 600 groups applications have already been pre-applied. And so the Missouri Department of Health has already accepted more than 600 pre-applications. Now those same and others that haven't pre-applied because it's not required are going through that process. And that so that should sort of speak to the level of interest Missourians being on the ground floor of this industry.
All right, so Jack, how much does it cost just simply to apply and that money is non-refundable, correct?
Absolutely. So if you're going to apply for a dispensary license in the state of Missouri, that'll cost $6,000. If you're going to apply for a cultivation license to be one of the growers in Missouri, that'll cost $10,000.
The reason for that is to filter out the folks who aren't serious players, right? Is that part of it?
Well, it's also, but it more importantly, it's how the Missouri Department of Health, which are the regulators of this program, how they pay for implementing this program. One of the things I have to say, and I'm not always, as you know, somebody that pats state government on the back, that the Missouri Department of Health has done a really nice job implementing this program. A lot of states have found it much easier to pass a medical marijuana program than they have to implement it. A lot of times we've seen delay or confusion or litigation. I mean, Arkansas, for instance, they passed medical marijuana in 2016. Just this May was the first time you could walk into a dispensary in Arkansas. So we're not seeing those type of delays here in Missouri, and a lot of that credit goes to Director Little Fraker and the people running the Missouri Department of Health.
Okay, so then what's the process from here? You have 600, I mean, that's a lot of applications. More than 50% of them are going to be thrown out. You know, they're not going to be accepted. So who, from here on, is there a board at the health department that handles these and siphons through them and tries to figure out who's going to get the licenses? And then what's the timetable for that?
Yeah, so one of the things we really like in the state of Missouri is the fact that they have, the Missouri Department of Health, they have written the applications, they've written the rules and regulations, but then they've brought in an out-of-state third-party vendor to actually score these applications. So these applications are going to be scored by professionals on their merits, not by political connections, not by any of that. So it really is an extremely above-board process the Department of Health has set up. That's what, you know, that's what obviously what we want, we think will make an efficient, effective program. Now, under the Constitution, the Missouri Department of Health must make these awards, must provide these licenses by the end of the year. So people are applying this week, and then they'll wait several months to hear whether or not they have one of Missouri's first medical marijuana licenses.
So, I mean, you'd have to act pretty quickly. If you don't find out till October, November, whether you have that, they're hoping to have stores open in January, right?
Well, so by December, they have to make those awards. And then, yeah, quickly, the people that have the business groups that have gotten these awards will have to then go and get their facility up and running. So obviously cultivation, most of that in Missouri is going to happen indoors in a warehouse. They're going to have to build out their HVAC, their lighting systems, all of that. But certainly it'll be a race to get plants in the ground at that point, because we'll see dispensaries open sort of in the spring, late spring, early summer of next year.
Jack, is there an easy way to describe who's going to make the cut and who's not going to make the cut? In other words, what will those scores be looking for, and how is that decided? Because that's a lot of applications and a lot of people probably who think they have just as good a right to open these dispensaries and cultivate and do these other things as the next guy.
Yeah. So
or the next gal, just to be politically correct here this afternoon.
If you look, there are a number of women-owned businesses that are really coming into the space, especially in Missouri, so it's something that's exciting. But if you look at the Department of Health's application, there's three or four categories that really stand out in importance. For instance, 20% of the entire application is going to be graded on security. site security, right? How are you making sure that people that are coming to a dispensary are safe, but how are you also making sure that the product and the money inside of that is handled appropriately? So security is a big deal. Having a positive economic impact on the local community is another big part of this. And then, of course, qualifications and experience. So those are three of the main categories that all of these applicants will be graded on.
Isn't some of the money stuff is tricky, though, because of the banking laws, isn't it?
This is one area where Congress's failure to act is really difficult. Unlike almost any other business, you know, Mark Reardon has a great idea. He takes a business plan, he takes a performer, he goes down to the local bank that he has a relationship with, and he says, I want to start a small business. Are you willing to loan me money? And mm-hmm. they may or may not be. I would not, of course.
Well, of course, you have good instincts, yes.
But on any other business, that is how it starts. Here in the U.S., because even though 34 states have medical marijuana programs, it's still technically illegal on the federal side. That makes banking very difficult. It makes loans for these type of businesses almost non-existent, and it even makes it hard for these businesses. They have very limited amount of banks that will actually let them put their cash into a basic checking account or a deposit account.
Yeah, I mean, because they could get in trouble for that. So then what do they do under those circumstances? Does it have to be like a state bank?
So, yeah, a lot of times what you'll see is you'll see just a few in every state, a state chartered bank. And, of course, they have to fill out a lot of paperwork. They have to do a lot of compliance. They certainly can bank these businesses, but it is an extra level of headaches. There is a federal bill going through right now, the Safe Banking Act, through Congress. It'll move out of the House, probably over to the Senate pretty quickly. A lot of people in our organization and in our industry are really hoping that happens. It only makes sense. If 34 states have some type of marijuana program, it doesn't make sense for this to be an industry that's still dealing in cash for the most part.
I agree with that. Jack Cardetti, who is a regular on the Reardon Roundtable, spokesperson this time around for Mocan Trade. Thanks for the update, Jack. We'll see where these applications take us in the very near future.
No problem. And there's already 5,600 patients that signed up for this program. So if you think medical marijuana may be an appropriate treatment option, now is the time to go see your state licensed physician.
All right. 231. That's... It's not the best reason to have him on, as so often is the case, but let me welcome Automatic Board President Lewis Reed into the studio this afternoon. Lewis, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark, and thanks for having me on today.
Well, let me start with this audio from yesterday. This was my audio cut of the day from Major, we may have changed your title, Major Mary Warnicki. My indication was this got used on CNN today as well, because it's, you know, she's making a great point. I think you're going to agree with her here as well.
We are here today because we have a 7-year-old who will not be starting school today. We have a 10-year-old murdered not that long ago in the city of St. Louis who will not be starting school today. We have a 2-year-old murdered on Ferris not so long ago. We have a 3-year-old who was murdered on Michigan not so long ago. And I know, people know, who shot and murdered these children. I know for a fact people know who is responsible. And we are not getting the calls that we need. We are not getting people knocking and demanding that we arrest these people. We need people to step it up. We need the community to call us. We need the community to be knocking on these other doors saying, hey, who did this? We should be having these phone calls. We have been getting some help. We have been getting some phone calls on some of these, but it's not enough. When the first thing that leads the news last night is the weather report, I'm not happy. I don't care about another storm in St. Louis. I care about who murdered this child.
Lewis, obviously angry. We heard some of the same sentiments from Chief Hayden recently as well. There's been, 11 kids here in the last several weeks that have been murdered in the city of St. Louis, or at least in the region, that are not going to school. And that's what we've talked about this
not
very
in the region,
issue.
In St. Louis.
Well, in St. Louis, but
since
also there were a couple, even there was a, I know
in
when
the,
I was on
in
vacation in Afton, for example,
yes.
A young man who was shot. But yes, even just in St. Louis proper, we've had 11 kids. So address the issue there with basically that boils down to snitches get stitches. And there is a fear on the part of some people to cooperate with police.
Yeah. This, first off, this is an issue that I believe we can address in the city of St. Louis But we're going to have to do things differently than we have in the past. Right. It's not enough just to tell the people to show up and give us information if there's no trust there. Right. Which is why we were pushing for body cameras and some of these other things that would help to build the trust between law enforcement and the public at large. Right. Now, is that an excuse for people not coming forward? Absolutely. It is not. Right. But we know that if we build stronger relationships, we'll have people coming forward, right? If we institute the program that I've been advocating for years now, Cure Violence, one of the components is it helps to establish that relationship that we need with the community so there's a pipeline of information coming back. Short of that, we're just talking to ourselves again.
But aren't these things take time? And I know what you're saying here.
They
and
take
I think
time.
You know, evolving over the course of years, maybe you can cultivate a better relationship.
Case study after case study shows that within a 12-month period, we would see a significant turnaround, right? So if we would have started this last year, right, we would have information today leading to the rest of that.
You know
person.
How many times you've come in here to talk about this? Why can't things actually progress in the city of St. Louis?
I'm in the legislative branch of government, right? This is an executive function. So you know, we've been pushing the executive branch to do this, to move away from these models that don't work. Hotspot policing, we're wasting our time, right? So we need to move to a model that works, that's going to yield the results that we need it to yield, right? I don't know about you, but I'm tired of seeing stories where parents are having to bury their kids. I mean, I'm a father of four, so I can imagine you being a father also. You understand, and it haunts you, right? The morning I woke up, directly after that happened, the first thing on my mind when I woke up, the last thing on my mind when I went to bed was that family and what they were going through, because I cannot imagine how difficult that is. People, your listeners, don't take my word for it. Go out there, do your own research, jump online, look up Cure Violence, right? Do your research, and if it is important to you, and if you think that'll make a difference, weigh in on it, because it's going to take the community stepping up and telling the lawmakers and everybody, you know what, move to something that's going to make a difference.
What's the pushback on the part of the mayor?
You know, the pushback on these things have been basically just silence on the other end, and there's always something else that somebody wants to try. Here's the thing to understand about addressing issues of public safety, particularly in an urban setting. Right, there are a million models out there. Right. Most of them don't work, right? There are only a handful that work well, a handful that have been recognized by the Justice Department that has the data and everything behind it that are data-driven models that have worked almost identical in every city they've put it in. Cure Violence is one of those models. So you tell me why we should be sitting here today attempting to create something and it has a high probability of failure, opposed to getting something that works and putting it in place and following all the different components of it so that we yield the results that we need in our city.
And, I know this is something that's very important to you. You're passionate about it. And I think, like a lot of us, you're disgusted by the level of violence that keeps occurring in this city. But why is it, you know, and I appreciate that we have a forum here on the radio to get some of the word out and your pleas. But is it really a situation, I always find this interesting inside the swamp in Washington, that there's not the ability? Now, granted, politics gets involved here. You ran for mayor, probably not the best relationship with the current mayor, but can't there be meetings that are forged between the Aldermanic Board president, other people on the Board of Aldermen, the mayor's office, and maybe even the chief of police and Judge Matthews to say, we got to get ourselves in a room here and do something about this and figure it out?
Absolutely. And I don't want to, and it's also important to note that the people that are working to address this on their every day, everybody from the chief to Judge Edwards, you know, the officers and people that are on duty, they're doing the absolute best they can with all the resources they have. with their understanding of how to address this issue, right? What myself and others are now saying are that there are better models out there, right? It's going to require you to do things differently than you've done them, right? It's going to require you to change some of your ingrained beliefs about a way to address these things. The risk for the city of St. Louis is that the longer it takes them to make those changes, the more we see a lot of the same reports that we see where kids are getting shot, people are getting, you know, carjacked just trying to take their groceries in for the evening, all these things, right? And these things can be addressed, and they can be addressed in a significant way. They're estimating, and I say they are the folks at Cure Violence, are estimating that we would see a 40 to 60% drop in our murder rate the first year.
Hang tight. Hold those thoughts. We'll come back. I want to talk about guns a little bit here. Aldermanic Board President Lewis Reed.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
Aldermanic Board President Lewis Reed is with me in the studio reacting to another child who died, a 7-year-old shot to death, the 11th in the area since June. Now, look, we know each other well enough that I can get into this issue here with race and the approach to violence, because we're in the 5th year anniversary of the Mike Brown situation. And Lewis, you know, and we've had some conversations about this, but look, I was told repeatedly, and sometimes I still am. I saw a column by Leslie McSpadden in the Washington Post yesterday, Mike Brown's mom, about how seemingly the issue with violence with young black men is white police officers. But look at the example. I was told over and over, they're killing our young black boys, mm-hmm. right? Well, who's killing young black boys in the city of St. Louis? Not white cops. So yeah. there is this, and I know this is maybe a separate issue, but I think that is important because, and you're trying to shine light. I've seen some of the black ministers in St. Louis. There was a rally a couple of weeks ago. So I know there's a tension to this, but you've got to, I guess maybe you're doing this, you got to keep shouting about it.
Yeah, both of those issues are completely, absolutely two very different issues, right? You know, the issue of young African-American boys being gunned down by, you know, quote unquote, white officers across the country. That is an issue that needs to be addressed, right? It has to do with just ingrained biases that everybody carries. I mean, whether you know, it's me, you, or any of us, right? We all make decisions based on information that we've collected along the way and what our beliefs are. So the question becomes, how do we change that so we have a better system that is a more balanced system, where if a split decision is being made, is not being made based on the race of the person at the other end of that decision.
No, and I understand that, but the focus of violence, really, I mean, I haven't sat here for the last 5 years and reported every single week on someone killed by a white cop. In fact, exactly. I haven't done that one time. Yeah. So what I have done way too many times is I've talked about these little kids being shot in the city of St. Louis, and I had to do it again this week, and you have to deal with it. You've had family members who have
exactly
been victims
right.
of yep. this violence. Yeah. So that's my concern, is that we don't give enough attention, because I see the headlines in the Post-Dispatch and the editorials about the white cops and all the racism, but this is really the crisis. This is an epidemic.
I'd say both.
And neither, we'll have to disagree on that.
Here's why I'd say both. I think both of them stand completely, completely separate. You can't even mix the two, right? Black on black violence it happens, right? White on white violence happens. Statistically, what it shows is that people who live in and amongst each other. So, if you go out to the rural areas, it's whites killing whites, right? Because they're living amongst each other in poverty and
right,
whatever.
Right. Well, we're getting into the weeds here.
Same thing in the city. Now, to your point, right? We cannot take away the fact that in the city, one of our major issues is young African-American males shooting and killing young African-American males, right? That's a major issue for us.
So at least we're honest about that. Where do guns play into this? Because I only have a couple of minutes, but do you have a new gun proposal?
Here, I'm supporting Congressman Lacey Clay's gun proposal. I think that cities and municipalities across this nation need to have more autonomy. They need to be able to enact their own gun laws based on the things that are happening here, you know, within our municipality. You know, I don't think it's any shock to anybody that the demographics of the city of St. Louis is quite different than the demographics of some of the rural areas of Missouri, right? But if you take a look at the makeup of the House and the State House and State Senate here in the state of Missouri, our representation of municipalities very similar to the city of St. Louis, we just don't have the same representation. So therefore, the laws that are coming out that affect us, they're affecting us in a different way. We need to have the ability to enact laws or to alter those things that we need to alter to better protect and better serve the people here in the city of St. Louis.
So, and I understand that. I don't know. I guess my response would be Washington, D.C. and Chicago tried to do things on their own, and the Supreme Court struck those bans down. I'm not saying you're talking about a gun ban, but what would be something that would be needed in the city that would not something that would apply to the other areas of the state that you would like to see?
I think there needs to be, you know, permitting. I think there needs to be background checks. I think, you know.
Come on, Lewis, there are background checks. Right, so, these guys are stealing guns. They're not going to get background checks.
I think that there needs to be a requirement that that if indeed your gun is stolen, that, you know, it is registered and reported in a timely fashion, right?
I've heard some conservatives actually support this liability insurance. I'm not saying I do, by the way, but liability insurance for gun owners.
That's not a bad idea either. But
you guys like anything that goes after guns. Anything. I get the Democrats that.
But ultimately, you know, more responsible gun ownership, right? So if you own a gun, you're coming downtown for whatever, or you're going baseball game.
I hear this all the time, but that's not the issue.
How else are these guns entering the illegal marketplace, right? They have to.
I don't think it's all
somewhere.
Happening from people are coming down to Cardinals games and, you know, getting ripped off in Forest Park. I think the issue is that the people who are committing the crimes have no, you know, respect for human life whatsoever, and this is the way that they've decided to solve their problems.
All right, then that's why I'm asking you to go research cure violence, because that's the way we're going to be able to address exactly what you said, and also being able to take these illegal guns off the streets. We need a comprehensive end-to-end plan that has data-driven, that has proven to work in multiple cities across this country. But cure violence has also been put in place internationally, and it works. We need it here in the city of St. Louis. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see what we're seeing today.
All right, good way to close, and we're going to talk more about this on the roundtable. I'll see you Friday afternoon. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Aldermanic President Lewis Reed.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.